I know you're broken hearted, cause the piece you're hoping for is off the scenes apart.
Gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other Podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I'm your host, Robert Rosenthal, coming to you live from my kitchen, where I am seated with Mr. Martin O'Donnell. Say hello, Mr. Martin O'Donnell.
Hello.
We are sharing beverages tonight. I have the this is just things left at tailgates. I have the Squeezy Rider IPA from Deschutes Brewery. I believe that's in Oregon.
Sure.
And sir, your beer of choice?
I have In the Cards from Pollyanna Brewing Company. I don't know where that is.
I believe somebody brought that to the last tailgate we did, so that might be a listener. It might be somebody listening saying, Martin O'Donnell is drinking the beer I brought.
Wonderful.
Yes. Okay.
Lamont, Illinois. Good for them.
All right. Good times. Okay. So we have something to talk about. It's October 26th?
Yep.
And we actually have, like, legitimate, it's not turn to basketball time, we legitimately have something to talk about, which, let's start here. Biggest road win since 07? I mean.
Yeah, I think so. I think you got to say
you
that.
You were in Pats, basically.
Yeah, since I played, it's been a little while.
Yeah.
It's been a little while.
I mean, has there been a bigger road win since Ohio State? I can't.
No, I mean, there were certainly important road wins along the way. I mean,
Michigan State
was important. Yep. You know, Northwestern, the Riley O'Toole game.
Yes.
That was an important game.
Yep.
Get to the bowl. You know, put it on arrival.
Yep.
But no, I mean, to do it, I think the stat was it's Illinois' third win on the road against a top 10 team in the last like 50 years, and so it's that game. It's Ohio State, and then I think is it the Michigan game?
93,
yeah.
Like Johnny Johnson. Yeah, they were like 9 or something like
something
that.
Something like that.
Yeah. So they've come in 93, 07, and 21. I mean, that's significant. Like, that's like.
It's very significant.
Like, that gives me the thought in my head, like, wait, maybe I'm not even, like, maybe this hasn't even fully sunk in yet. Like, this was a big deal. Now, look, Penn State will lose to Ohio State this weekend by 30, fall the rankings, and it'll be like, oh, well, then they just weren't a top 10 team. But still. You know, Auburn went there. Auburn only had 180 rushing yards, and that was the most they had given up all year rushing. Illinois does
357. But who remembers?
Magnum. Who could just pull that number out of their head? So, okay, as an offensive lineman, here's where we're going to start. As an OL guy, you in the booth watching 7 offensive linemen, 2 tight ends, no wide receivers, a quarterback and a tailback, put up 357. What are your thoughts, feelings, emotions?
Well, I think it was great. I mean, obviously that's, you know, so a couple things. One, you know, I like the adjustment, getting the extra offensive lineman out there. And I think they clearly took the perspective that they thought they could run on Penn State. They were absolutely correct. And they being, you know, Brett Bielema, Tony Peterson, the offensive staff, they were correct. But, you know, again, they weren't in a 7 offensive lineman package all game. They did have a lot of success just running out of typical personnel, the regular offensive line. And, you know, Brett Bielema talked about it in his press conference on Monday. But it is one of those things where I think part of it that's so satisfying is you see, you know, they come out in 7 offensive lineman package. You know, Chase Brown has 50 yards before you can blink, which is great. But then what they wind up doing is, you know, Vidarian Lowe gets hurt in like the second quarter. And so then, you know, we have the break, and, you know, Brian's like, well, what do you think they're going to do with the offensive line? I said, well, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, maybe do they move Paltrow back to right tackle and put Pearl at left tackle, and then you bring in another guy guard. But no, they decided to, you know, put Pilstrom at left tackle. You know, it wasn't any hesitation. And I thought Alex Pilstrom did a great job. And so you have that, but then you have the ramification of what that means when you go to that barge package or whopper package, whatever they're calling it. And so you have other guys in. So then you have Blake Jarasati in there. You have Zach Barlev in there. But long story short is, it's hard to run the ball for 357 yards on anybody, let alone on the road in a conference game and against, you know, what has been a very good Penn State defense. Now, they had a defensive tackle who's out for the year, but that was one of the things coming into the game. I said, holy cow, I'm watching film, and I'm like, you know, Penn State's got 3 and 4 defensive tackles they can roll through there that are all probably 290 to 305, athletic, probably very highly recruited, and then they have a very good linebacking core. And, you know, and going into the game, I mean, Penn State's secondary, you know, their radio guy said that's the best secondary they've seen in 40, 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is a good defense.
Yep.
And to do that against that defense and do it repeatedly and keep them off balance enough. But it's really encouraging, right? And I think you know, when you talk about importance and impact, obviously we'll have to look in hindsight at the end of the year. Hey, how does this stack up? But I think it's very important for Brett Bielema, for this coaching staff, for this program in year one to kind of show the blueprint. This is kind of where we want to go, guys, and to prove that you can do it in that environment. I think that in and of itself is very, very important. Now, obviously, I want to see them followed up with more success here because there's plenty of football left to play.
Now, we talked about that last week, and I forgot to ask you this week, so I'm going to ask you live on the air here. So it's not just the Penn State radio guys, Jack Ham, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and he always does the sit-down with the other radio guy. So you had that when? Friday night?
It was Friday during the day. Yeah, it's a phone call. Yeah. I mean, okay. So sometimes, you know, radio guys talk to other radio guys. Like, yeah. I don't know, I'm kind of antisocial. So, I'm happy to talk to people, but I'm also busy enough that I'm not going to actively do it. But Jack Ham does a great job in terms of going out and, you know, I always look forward to every week we play, every year we play Penn State. It's kind of cool to talk football with Jack Ham for 30 or 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, my dad would be going nuts at the thought of that, of talking to Jack Ham. So, what is the, I'm guessing he was supremely confident, right? Like,
no, he's not. He's always a fun guy to talk to because he'll say, hey, you know, I'll go through our roster. You go through your, and we just have a conversation. Mm-hmm. He'll say, hey, what do you think about this? You know, he asked about the comments last week. You know, what do you think the vibe is with the team? You know, I kind of give my impression, blah, blah, blah. But really just kind of talking. And one thing in the conversation with him, which kind of, you know, and it helps me to kind of think through these things is, you know, he knows Penn State well. I know Illinois well. And it was going to be an interesting matchup just because Penn State's, again, their strength was their secondary. Very good against teams that want to pass the ball. Illinois has not been very good passing the ball. You know, Illinois can run the ball on offense. Penn State, you know, they've been okay at stopping the run. But again, you look at defensively, you know, I think Illinois has done a really nice job. And I think the defensive scheme looks similar against Penn State as it did against, you know, a Maryland or a Purdue, where you drop a lot of guys in the coverage, you force the quarterbacks. In particular, you know, what they did to Sean Clifford reminded me a lot of what they did to Taulia Tagovailoa, where both of those quarterbacks, very good when they go off script, right? So when, you know, they break the pocket, it's scramble drill, you have athletes on the outside, and those guys can make plays. But other than, you know, I think defensively they were a little more aggressive than they were against Maryland. I don't know, I can't remember the Maryland game enough. It was a long time ago. But some really well-timed blitzes. But there were a lot of times rushing three, rushing four, get pressure with those guys, keep the quarterback in the pocket, and you're dropping 7 and 8 into coverage, and you're forcing them to try to do something that they're not as comfortable doing. So that, I think, you know, wound up being really good defensive scheme. And then again, you couple that with really, I mean, even going back and rewatching the game, Bob, and we may have talked about this on Monday, but there were not many series where on defensively you had to roll in the second string guy.
Yep.
Because the offense was sustaining drives, defense was rested, and then all of a sudden, you know, and the defense is doing a good job of getting off the field on third down. So that's the fun part. That's kind of what hurt them against Wisconsin. You had no Seth Coleman, you had no Calvin Avery, and so that already kind of tight D-line rotation was even tighter. And you have a Wisconsin team that was 17 play drives and offense was three and out.
Yep.
And so those things just kind of build on each other as the game goes. As you know, you watch enough football, this thing starts to happen. You can sit there in the first quarter and be like, okay, we got to fix this. But it was the inverse, you know. So Illinois comes out, has some drives. And even when they weren't putting points on the scoreboard, which again is 10-10 at the end of regulation, not a lot of points on the scoreboard, Illinois did a nice job of flipping field position, getting enough drives. If they're backed up, they get a couple first downs. Blake Hayes, and it became a field position game, and the defense did a really nice job answering the bell, especially in those two turnovers basically on the doorstep of the red zone, and it was a missed field goal and field goal.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yep. I didn't, like, let myself really believe. I mean, the defense was playing that well. So, like, mid-third quarter, I started to have these, like, I don't think this is they're going to break through soon anymore. This is like, well, we're really taking away everything they're trying to do. And then, but I still am like, okay, but we're on the road, homecoming, out, we know what's coming, you know, this and that. And so then when Penn State got the ball back with 5 minutes left or whatever, it's like, okay, here's the drive.
Yeah.
We saw it at Purdue. We saw it against Maryland. Here it is. 55 great minutes of defense, then one drive. All they need is a field goal, so here it comes. They picked up those two first downs. It's like, okay, yep, we know what's coming. And then what was it? Like 2 yard loss, 4 yard loss, incomplete pass on 3rd and 15 or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're punting with 30 seconds to go. And it was just, you know, that was this moment for me of like, whoa, like, wait. Like everything I've had in my head of like, well, yes, and we've played well, but I started to let that stuff go of like, wait, this is a dependable thing now. You know, this has been game after game. And yeah, Wisconsin could probably put up more than 24 because they dominated everything they were trying to do, and the, you know, they just wore us down basically. But, you know, in the last 5 games, the defense has been very, very dependable.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it just takes a while to knock off all the scales for me of like, okay, but I was at the Virginia game. I remember how this can go badly. I remember how just a wide open passing. I remember what Maryland did on those 2 drives of just chunk play, chunk play, chunk play. So I just keep expecting it. But now, you know, what are we, you know, I looked it up today. We're like in the 5 Big Ten games, we've averaged like giving up 19.2 points or something. Like
yeah, that. We look at, you know, we get the packet every Monday at the press conference, and so, you know, slowly the national points per game, you know, and they do it in terms of the entire NCAA has been kind of coming down. I want to say we're in the 50s or 60s right now, and started in the, you know, hundreds after the Virginia game, right?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, in Big Ten play, this defense has been really good, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you see a lot of different guys doing it, and you know, they're kind of switching things up from week to week, and different guys are making plays. You know, Tony Adams made a couple huge plays. Devin Witherspoon, some huge plays.
Back to back huge plays.
Yes. Yeah, right. I mean, they try the wide receiver screen. He nails that. And then the corner blitz, you know, gets in on the sack. And then, you know, it was a defensive unit that was getting stronger as the game went along. You know, and I wasn't cognizant and conscious of that as you're kind of in the flow of the game. But going back and rewatching, you're like, nah, these dudes are locked in, you know, and they're ready to go. And, you know, and the guys up front, you know, Johnny Newton, Rod Perry, you know, Keith Randolph. I mean, those guys are doing a good job. You have Isaiah Gay doing a nice job. Owen Carney. I mean, everybody who's kind of rolling through there, Seth Coleman again, the guys that are rolling through are making plays. And, you know, it's fun and it's gratifying because, you know, I was one of the fun things about college football is, you know, by and large, you're gonna see, now it's different than the transfer portal, so I'm gonna hedge my comment here, but you see guys grow over 3 to 5 years, and that's the fun part. And so to see Devin Witherspoon out there, you know, making those plays is really fun. You know, to see some of these guys come through, you know, see, you know, guys like Doug Kramer on the offensive line and Vidarian Lowe and Alex Palcheski. I mean, I remember when, you know, Lowe and Palcheski and Kramer were playing at Iowa as freshmen. You know, and so there's just a lot of that stuff. And so that's the part of it to me, you know, more than anything, like I get so excited for those guys. I'm excited for their families who are there, you know, who are there celebrating. It took a long time. Usually it's, you know, by the time the whistle is, you know, the final whistle blows to when the buses leave the stadium for the airport, it's usually supposed to be like an hour. It was probably like an hour and a half to an hour 45. Just everybody's taking their time, and rightfully so, enjoying it, enjoying the moment. You know, which was great. And then, you know, I think it was great they went to the basketball game, so you're able to get kind of the, you know, there were fans at the airport, which is always fun, you know, some of the coaches' families, but I think they're also just fans there. And then you get, you know, guys, you know, they're able to get kind of, you know, come out at halftime or whatever, they came on the basketball game, kind of get that pop, you know, get some of the, you know, the you know, the adulation, you know, kind of from the Illini Nation for some of those folks. So it's just fun. That's the fun part. It's big on a lot of levels, and we can talk about all that, but you know, at the end of the day, it's about the people, you know. And so knowing, you know, the staff has come in, they've grinded. You know, again, I love where the program is going. And then for those guys to do that in year one of the program, and, you know, when you have these 22, 23 super seniors who came back, you know, they hadn't had the season that they wanted to this point. But, hey, you know, this is the inflection point, and then let's go from there.
Let's compare it to – I mean, you and I talked about this a little bit on Monday, but, like, you know, this is a little bit like – okay, so you redshirt during a – let me see if I can get this right. You redshirt during a 1-11 season.
Yeah.
As a freshman, you guys were 3-8, and then you went 2-9, 2-10. So you're going into your senior year with none of those moments, none of those
– right.
Like you had the 06 Michigan State celebration in the locker room. There's that famous video and everything else. Like you – that was like the first real breakthrough moment when you were – but then like – I mean, describe what it's like to have that over and over and over, and just kind of nothing and nothing, and the meeting up with the parents afterwards is kind of the same feeling all the time. And then after the Ohio State game, you guys come to the airport and there's people outside the fences, like trying to get in. Like, what, you know, that has to feel, you know, as a player who's gone through that over and over and over, that has to feel good.
Yeah. I mean, it feels great. I mean, I remember when we came, so when we, the 2006 Michigan State game, that was the first road game that we'd won. So I'd never won a game on the road before. You know, our class had never won a game on the road.
Yep.
When we came back from that game, there was one couple at the airport, an older couple clapping for it. So,
God bless them. God bless them. I want to find them right now.
God bless them. Oh. I mean, unbelievable. And so that's always the thing that sticks out to my mind is you go from that to a year later and there's just like tons of people outside of the airplane and everything. So yeah, I mean, and that's part of it too. Like, I also know – I said this to somebody earlier today, but I also know like just the importance of that. And I know like these guys 20 years from now are going to have people when they find out they played football in Illinois and we're on this team, regardless of what happens the rest of the season. Again, I think there's obviously a ton to play for this season, but regardless of all that, people are going to come up to them and be like, I remember the 9 overtime game in 2021. Like, that was amazing. I mean, and so like people can get, so like knowing that these guys have kind of, that game is a game in Illinois football history. Like, it's a game in NCAA history. I mean, there's the gloves and the ball that are going to the College Football Hall of Fame, you know, all that cool stuff. Like, that's all there. So those guys have been a part of that. Now it's about like, okay, what's the next chapter? I mean, I look at this game as, you know, this feels so similar to 2019 to me. It's crazy because you have the Wisconsin game and okay, that was fantastic. And what were we, I mean, we had to, I can't remember what, 2-4 going into Wisconsin?
2-5, right?
Whatever.
No, 2-4.
Two and four going
into
Wisconsin.
You're right, because we went to 6-4 with the poor game.
So two and four going into Wisconsin. So the Wisconsin game was unbelievable, great memories, all that good stuff. But then we had a road game at Purdue, which you knew was going to be a tough game.
Yep.
Same kind of thing here. A little different. It's a home game against Rutgers, but it's going to be a tough game. Past couple years against Rutgers have been tough games. You know, I've watched a couple of Rutgers games from this year, and it must just be the same way that they feel like it's the same friggin' guys we've played the last 3 years.
Right.
Like, like I don't even need to write their names down. Right. Like, you know, Fatukasi and Teverdove and, you know, Fogg. I mean, all these guys on defense that are just very similar. You know, Noah Vidral is still there. Johnny Langan, who started a quarterback, I think, against us maybe 3 years ago, is there in kind of an H-back role. Like, all these guys, I'm like, they're all still here.
Yes.
So those have always been hard-fought games. And again, last year against Rutgers, it was Isaiah Williams just doing Isaiah Williams things, setting the quarterback rushing record for the program in order to get the win. You get it on the kick with McCourt. So I know it's going to be a tough game, but it feels very similar where it's like, hey, yes, that one game was unbelievable, huge, great memory, but it'll mean a whole lot more if you win the next one.
Yes.
And then what that means from there.
Yes. And that would be like – the feeling, you know, say if they do win this weekend to get to 4-5, then you're looking at this Minnesota game. You're thinking about Minnesota losing to Bowling Green. You know, sure, they're 5-2, 3-1 in the Big Ten, but like, hold on a second. You know, they're at least beatable, and you have this defense that can do something. And, you know, like, you just start to, you know, I would have never thought after Virginia or even after Wisconsin that we'd possibly be having that conversation, because it's going to take, oh, well, now you got to beat a Penn State or an Iowa to even talk about these kinds of things. And then they go and do it. So, yeah, it feels good to be late October and not have the entire fan base switched over to basketball. You know, I know the basketball anticipation is huge, and as it should be, and I'm excited as well. But you know me, and we've had this conversation before. Like, that, the October, November feeling of, hey, where'd everybody go? You know, I hate that. Like, you can still watch the games. You can still be part of this. I still want to talk about this. I still want to, you know, dissect what happened. You don't have to just switch it off until next August. So that's what I'm most excited about. Like, that's the feeling I've had the last few days, is like this whole, like, we're back, baby. Like, not Illinois football is back, but like, you know, people are going to want to talk about it, kind of thing. You know, right. I want to exist in that space. That's the world I want to live in. And so just the mood around the Monday press conference is, you know, night and day from what it was the week before. And that's exciting to me. I like that that's part of the kind of culture change we're talking about here, is that it matters and that it's relevant, and it takes moments like this to get to there. So, yeah, I can't, you know, the win keeps getting better day by day by day for me this week, you know, of just thinking back on what happened and thinking what it could mean and how it, you know, could be this turning point. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so give me your favorite moment of the overtime. I was having this conversation with some friends. Like, you know, there's so many moments of even like, was it the first or second overtime with Tariq Barnes got the TFL and they had to kick the field goal. I can't remember if it was I think it was the first overtime. They all blend together.
Yeah, I know. I rewatched even this 2 days ago, yes, and I can't remember anymore.
Even in the first two overtimes where they're actually playing real football with first downs and such, you know, there were just so many plays in this game of like, you know, we never stop that third and one and force an overtime. Like that's somebody will sneak it. You just know what's going to happen. So to see some of these plays is just, I'll give you my favorite play. And it's probably just because the St. Louis connection, but the Isaiah Williams stretch was kind of you broke the seal on the 2-point conversion. What was it? 10 straight.
10 consecutive, not
10 converted straight misses.
Yeah, right.
Which is, you know.
Great defense is what that is.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the jokes were flying on Twitter, you know. Okay, I'm going to pause our little favorite play thing, and I'll just say this. Like I had a couple of those jokes sent. I've got like a Kentucky troll. I don't know why. I honestly don't know why. I've got a guy, you know.
Is it Antigua?
No.
Okay.
Well, it might be. He's got four followers.
More likely Chin.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sitting here trying to fight my brain from saying all this stuff, but I'm just going to say it. He's got four followers. He's got the shades on in the picture. Of course he has shades on in the picture. He's got his girlfriend scratched out of the other side of the picture. So it's a picture with his girlfriend and the other side is scratched out. And he just comes at me with all this stuff. Like I said, something about, you know, SEC or something. He'd come at me this and that. Anyway, I've got all these trolls. This guy wasn't the one, but
you can mute them, right?
I know, but I kind of enjoy it. And it's the guy with the shades.
Okay, sure.
And, you know, and his name is like something, something 384744-9632. Like that guy is just that guy. The name is going to have a bunch of numbers. There's going to be the Oakley's in the avatar with the girlfriend scratched out and four followers. Anyway, it wasn't him, but another one of my guys like is sending me like the jokes during overtime of like, see, look, even when you win, your football program's a joke. I don't think people understand the scar tissue we have that we don't hate those jokes. I will join in on those jokes. You know, there was one, I can't remember who it was. I wish I could. There was one like by the 11th overtime, they're going to just have an Illinois player and a Penn State player go out there and they're going to hold up a football and say, what is this? And if neither team gets it right, then by the 12th overtime, they're going to have a crayon contest. And, you know, so there's all these jokes about, sure, you know, this is the most Big Ten thing ever. It's a 20-18 game. And, you know, you can't have a more Big Ten moment than this. You can't hurt me. Like, nope, none of these things. Right. I love being part of that. I don't hate the Big Ten West culture. I love in the weight room, in the community. Like, I am so in on us being kind of mocked for what that is, because this is what I want to run game and defense. I love it. Like, these are the things I want. I don't care if we win 13-3. Like, I'll take it. I enjoyed 1994, 93, like, beating East Carolina 7-6. Like, I'm okay with that. I don't need to be Oklahoma. I don't need to be anything else. I'm fine being Illinois, and I want to see this culture developed. That's my side story. Back to the overtime. Your favorite play, your single favorite play. For me, it was Isaiah Williams just fighting, breaking the seal, turning the game around. You know, four guys ready to tackle him, and somehow he finds that gap to get in.
Yeah, and I can't remember. So that's certainly one of them. Obviously, you know, you have to say that the final play that ended it, just because of all the narrative street that's around that. You know, Brandon Peters to Casey Washington in that moment. But you know, and I can't remember. It was in that. So was the Isaiah Williams one in the seventh overtime?
Eighth.
It was in the eighth. Okay. So this either was in the eighth overtime or the sixth overtime or the fourth. It was an even numbered overtime because it was that end of the field.
That end, yes.
Yeah, that end of the field. But I would say, you know, defensively, and I think Penn State, I think they I can't remember if it was a run play. It might have been the shovel when they tried the shovel pass, and it looked like they were going to break through. And then there was, you know, Keith Randolph is on the guy, and a couple other guys come, and they just there were two instances, two stops in overtime where it looked like Penn State was going to get there, and then they just didn't.
Yep.
You know, back to your we've seen elements of this game
yep.
a lot where that's happened before. That guy's gotten the extra 6 inches, mm-hmm. or he's reached the ball out, or he's gotten the thing, and you know, again, that was just the. You know, it was fun watching the sidelines during all that because, you know, again, it was ludicrous that every, you know, when we get to the third overtime, every two plays, they're just switching sides of the field to get away from the student section. And, you know, so that they're literally just walking up and down the field in front of us. And we're standing in the press box. Okay, they're going to this side. But, I mean, the Illinois sideline, they were into it. I mean, they were juiced up. They were excited again. And that defense, I mean, they just kept getting stronger. Yeah. And they were just down to brawl and that was fun. Yep. Like that was a lot of fun. But yeah, I mean the Isaiah Williams, I mean, it's a great play because you watch it as it starts to develop, you're like, oh, it's yep. done.
Yeah.
It's done.
I was 100% it's like
because nope, nope, Penn State played it perfectly.
Yep.
But
yep.
then he just sticks his left foot in the ground, gets over there, you know, gets on, you know, Penn State tries to grab him, he's on top of the defender, reaches the ball across. Mm-hmm. And it was great. And again, for it to happen in that end zone where they call back the other two touchdowns, yep. you know, in regulation.
Yep.
It was fun to watch. But, yeah, I mean, it was – I mean, I think I like the new overtime rules. It's exhausting.
Yes.
Like, it's just exhausting because you're bracing yourself
yep.
every play. I mean, yep. and again, even in the first two regular overtimes, there's huge plays there. I think Penn State went for it on fourth down in the first overtime. I think they hit the Wildcat formation. I can't remember. It was on that end of the field.
Yep.
But there's just a lot of plays where you're like, okay, here it is. Okay, mm-hmm. here it is. Mm-hmm. And then you had to do it another 8 times, 9 yes. times, 10 times.
Yeah. I didn't mind it. Like, I'd heard of the rule, and I guess I hadn't thought through exactly what it would be like.
I Googled it hard yeah. in the fourth quarter.
Like, I was kind
to
of...
to make sure I knew it was
coming. Like, I knew it was coming, but I thought... My thinking was, okay, well, this is going to be over in the first overtime. Like, I didn't think... they would match each other
right.
for that long.
Right.
So my thinking probably just went along with what NCAA was saying, which is, hey, we're going to change the overtime rules because we're sick of these 6-7 overtimes. We want it to get over, so here's what we're going to do. So I hadn't really thought through, mm-hmm. wait, if there's two great defenses, you could go to 26 overtimes and nobody's scoring from three on one play. And so I just hadn't thought that through. So when it went to the third overtime, I'm like, here we go. This is going to decide it. Either we get it or they get it, and that's it.
And you weren't even halfway home, buddy.
Well, I wasn't even. Yes. Like, I made
a third of the way home.
On the TV thing that I recorded with Brett on the field, you know, I said something like, I can't remember if it was top or the bottom of the ninth. I'm like, this is baseball. Like, this is, you know. I was like, in the bottom of the sixth, they brought in the reliever. But, yeah, I hadn't thought through, you know, it starts to hit you at, like, the fourth, fifth overtime of, like, wait. How long can this go? Like, how do you yeah. know, because you start to think about a hockey shootout or a soccer shootout,
right?
Where it's like, okay, well, both teams scored three and saved two. Now we're going to extras. Both score. Now both miss. Now both miss. And it's like, wow, this could go a long time. So yes, I wasn't prepared. I was nervous. I was pacing around the press box. I went all the way down to the far end. I was standing by a TV so I could watch some replays, and there was I think stat takers, like three students, Penn State students, who were like mm-hmm. living and dying with the game, and like, God, I'm such a jerk. I'm not a jerk. I was nice. No, I wasn't. The Sitkowski injury happens. They're watching the replay and they don't see the arm, and they're just like, "Ooh, he nailed him!" So now I'm angry, like a parent at a junior football game. I'm like, "He broke his arm," and then they all kind of like shut up and like, "Oh, I didn't see that. Oh, that well, yeah, that is bad. Oh, you hate to see that," is what one of the guys said. So like, I'm that guy who's like, "Hey, shut up, man!" And like, okay, take a deep breath. Like, so then after that,
angry blogger gets yes. escorted out of
exactly.
Denver Stadium.
Yes. Don't ooh, you crunched him when you just broke his arm. But yeah, I mean, that's when they showed the slow-mo replay and you could yeah. see his arm like flop over when mm-hmm. he rolled. Anyway, so then I just walked to the back windows, you know, that's the other thing is like, maybe on TV, you don't get the sense of how long that walk is. So they try the fourth overtime, nothing, and now it's going to be like 3.5 minutes of everyone going to the other end.
Right.
And it's just like, I guess, did they go to any commercials? Probably not. I don't even know how they do the broadcast. Is there a rule for, like, you know, after the fifth overtime?
I think they got all the commercial breaks required to get in.
Good point.
They were
in. Good point. Good point. So I remember during one of those breaks just going back to the windows and looking out over the tailgate, you know, the tailgate scene there to the west of Beaver Stadium, and just had this moment of like, I mean, look at how much is invested in Penn State football. Like, it is cars as far as you can see. The golf course over there is full, and, you know, this and that. It's 100,000 people. And I just kind of collected myself of like, you know what, if we pull this out, like, you know, it just kind of hit me what a massive deal this would be. Like,
yeah.
There are so many people there just invested in that.
Right.
And if they lose to Illinois, they are going to hate their lives for a long time. Like, you know, our stench, which we all hate, also comes with, wow, people really, really hate losing to us. And that's kind of fun. So, yeah, I just collected myself and came back for like the, you know, the top of the sixth or whatever you want to call it, and then that's when it was like, you know what, this is like fun, like we are right there toe-to-toe with number seven, national broadcast, you know, all of that stuff just started to hit me. Like,
yeah,
you know what, all of Twitter is on this right now, all of, you know, people at bar in Albuquerque somewhere is walking up and like, hey guys, come over and check this out, they're in the sixth overtime, and you know, we're the center of the world, and Casey Washington has that moment. So it just, I'm glad I had that moment staring out the windows, because it put it back in perspective for me of like, this is really fun. If we pull this off, this is a massive moment for Illinois football.
Absolutely.
So,
and it was.
Yes. Yes. Did we get to your favorite? I don't know if we ever named your favorite.
I copped out. I named a couple. I said Isaiah and the defensive play. You know, there are a couple of great defensive stops in there.
Yep.
Again, the defense just kept standing up.
Yep. Yep. What do you think? Let's talk through we're going to call it the barge package, because they even put a tweet out about barge today. So I guess that, in a sense, it's not like, some people have been asking me like, okay, well, is this our thing? Are we a service academy? They have their triple option. We have the barge and we'll just go to all the time. It's not that kind of a thing.
Mm-mm.
And if you just do that,
yeah, it doesn't
defenses
work.
Are going to set up to like, oh, well, we'll go five down linemen and almost a goal line package. We'll
yeah,
three linebackers.
Exactly.
We'll just go two corners and a safety, and now we can just power into every gap and everything else. So, offensive lineman wise, talk about like how it's not. It's a great package, and I hope we see more of it, but it's not some, like, this is our offense.
No, it's not the base offense, and that's what I mentioned earlier. Yes, they had success running, you know, kind of the seven offensive linemen out there with, you know, the other tight ends, and so you got all those. You basically have nine guys on a line of scrimmage other than the quarterback and the single back, tailback there. But, you know, so it's a change up, and certainly with Penn State, and I can't recall now, but, I mean, Penn State was not, like, bringing in an extra defensive lineman when we did that. They were choosing to stay in their base personnel, and so they had 4D linemen out there, and then they got the linebackers and the DBs, and so automatically you have mismatches, right? And automatically you have some of these gaps that otherwise, you know, would be there, and they're there, but again, it's, you know, it's a double team sometimes between two offensive linemen or an offensive lineman and a tight end on, like, an outside linebacker. Okay, so that's advantage Illinois. But again, what I really liked with that was, you know, we started kind of running to, you know, what I'll call the strong side, you know, which wound up being, well, I got to do my math here now. So you had a right tackle, and the way they started, you had a right guard, a right tackle, and a tight end. And then everybody else lined up on the other side. Mm-hmm. And so we ran the first several times to that strong side to the left in that scenario. But we also showed the ability to cut it back to the right. Mm-hmm. So then they had to be honest, because sometimes when you have an unbalanced line formation, the defense will shift over a gap to kind of help to cover for it. Penn State did not shift over initially. I can't remember if they were doing it. I don't have end zone copy or anything, kind of what they did afterwards. But that was it. It is a changeup, right? So you don't throw your changeup all the time, because you're going to give up a home run. If you have those guys out there, because obviously, what can't you really do out of that package? You can't really throw.
Yep.
I mean, there are guys that can be eligible receivers, but they're tight ends on the outside of the line, or you could dump it off the tailback. You don't have a ton of options. But again, Illinois had a lot of success running out of their base personnel and running what they run. You know, running kind of, you know, that outside sweep, kind of pin and pull, the tight end, you know, blocks down, you pull the guard in the center, you know, and Doug Kramer and the center and the guards did a nice job of picking up blocks out there. You got the wide receivers blocking, you got tight ends blocking, you know, Luke Ford did a great job. Tip Ryman's been a lot of fun to watch in terms of a blocker this year. And so they changed it up, and that's what it is. It's a change up. Will they have that package going forward? Yeah, probably. Will we see it as much? I don't know. You know, we'll see. I think it depends on what the matchups are.
Yes.
In terms of run defenses. So, like, against Rutgers, I could see them try to do that maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, will they try to do that against Iowa? Probably not as much.
I doubt it, yeah.
Probably not as much.
Yeah, I had the same thought. Like the game kind of reminded me of the Wrigley Field game in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is we had just lost to 2-8 Minnesota or whatever the week before. Horrible loss. We were all ready to wrap up a bowl and we didn't do it. Couldn't run the ball, couldn't move the ball on offense. Like, that was a horrible game. That was just, Minnesota had an interim coach. They had fired Brewster. That was a mess. So then we're going to the Wrigley game where, you know, Northwestern is favored. We're the run game is suddenly struggling after a great season and this and that. And we come out in this run heavy, just run every time package.
Mm-hmm.
And LeSure is getting 15 and then 12 and then 26. And, you know, like we basically had saved something that we hadn't really fully pulled with the entire year. And there was a lot of three tight end stuff in that game and everything else. But that's kind of like a one-time card you can pull. Like, I felt like in that game, Northwestern was expecting something a little different, and they had practiced against something a little different. And I remember having Jay Prosh in there, Evan Wilson in there, Eddie Vanoulis in there. We're going heavier, and we're going to run the ball, and they're just going to have to deal with it. And, you know, obviously it was, 519 rushing yards that day or whatever it was. Crazy. It's kind of reminded me of that we hadn't really had a game this year where it was like, look, we kind of did against Charlotte, but we didn't do this kind of thing. Yeah, maybe we don't even need to pass because we're going to rush for 350 and, you know, try and deal with it and try and adjust to it. Now Penn State will spend the week, or I'm sorry, Rutgers will spend the week preparing for it, and we're probably, you know, going to have another lever to pull, which is the next question of, can we resuscitate any kind of passing game? Because, you know, people have started thinking, gosh, you beat Northwestern and Rutgers, then you're one of those road wins from a 6-6 season.
Right.
You know, I am at, like, until I see a passing game, you're not going to win 3 of the last 4. Even if the defense continues to play this well, you have to have some semblance of something. So what are your thoughts on possibly getting patching together a passing game?
My thoughts are I'd like to see it. I think certainly, I mean, you have Isaiah Williams there. You know, I think you still have the tight ends. And we knew coming into this season, you know, look, we got to, who's going to be the, you know, one of my big things coming into the year is who's going to be the playmaker in the passing game? Because you're going to have to complete passes. You just are. I mean, it's college football. You know, so I still think it's going to be a lot of play action, obviously. I think, you know, you can get Chase Brown and Josh McCray and those guys involved in the passing game. But, you know, I think, you know, hopefully, you know, Brandon, you know, found something with that spark there. I mean, just getting, you know, that was so similar to the Michigan State play where we found Daniel Barker in the back of the end zone. I mean, same, very, very similar thing. And I think a lot of the rest of the season, I mean, honestly, Bob, I mean, a lot of it depends on health. It's health for everybody because that was the thing that was kind of where the wheels came off in 2019 is guys just started getting really hurt at the end of the year and after the Michigan State game. And so all of a sudden, you know, Northwestern does to us in the last game of the year what we just did to Penn State. Northwestern like probably threw like 4 passes that game at Memorial Stadium.
Yep.
They just basically ran a triple option offense and they won pretty handily. So, you know, I'm interested to see kind of what are the wrinkles to get that going. You know, Brandon Peters getting him comfortable early. You know, I think you get him off to a good start. That'll certainly help, because the one thing, the absolute thing that Rutgers is going to watch, and from watching a little bit of Rutgers film, they've given up a lot of pass. I haven't looked at, I got to go back and look at the statistics. I've watched them play a couple of games. I've watched them play maybe most of three of their last four games. They gave up huge plays in the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not as much in the running, but they give up a lot of plays. Guys just get lost in coverage. You know, they're playing zone and somebody's sitting there. So those opportunities in the passing game will be there. Again, I don't know where that stands in terms of Rutgers' statistics overall in the season. They started out hot. They didn't play a ton of people. But, again, they're going to be tough. They're going to be salty. You know, they're going to be that team that you hate to play. So it's going to be a challenging game. But, again, we beat Rutgers last year not completing a whole lot of passes.
It's true.
So, yep. So yeah, I agree we're going to have to do that. But I also say, look, there's clearly the identity being formed there on offense. The most amazing statistic to me still about the Penn State game is you lost the turnover margin by three.
Yep.
Minus three in the turnover margin. Mm-hmm. And what was, you know, like Bill Connolly's like win I mean, like Illinois, there was nothing fluky about it.
Mm-mm. Not an ounce.
I mean, that was a
not
win-win.
An ounce. Yes.
And so
Penn State would have been super lucky had they, you know,
yeah,
gotten a half extra yard in the seventh overtime or whatever.
But we got to play complimentary football. You know, certainly every team we play from here on out, and that's what a lot of teams have been doing. They've been loading the box irrespective of what package we come out in. They're going to play man-to-man on the outside. They're going to load the box and try to stop the run. And so in that respect, I think the barge package is a great response saying, okay, fine, we're just going to run.
Yep.
Good luck stopping us.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something, you know, as long as Chase is cleared by – he was supposed to be cleared by tomorrow, I think, or whatever. To, you know, he was going to be on the bike today at practice and cleared for contact tomorrow, something like that. You know, as long as he is back – I don't even want to say it out loud. Like, this is just so Illinois football fan of me. I had this moment in the, you know, when he busted that long run where he almost broke through and had kind of tried to twist out of the final tackle, and if he did, he was gone. It was right then that I had this moment of like, oh God, he could go after this year. Like, he could declare for the draft.
Are you serious?
Yes. Yes. So,
you're sick.
Yes, I am sick. I need him back next year. So let's have him have a really good game, but not a super game, so that we get him back next year. This is how my brain works.
You're so selfish.
Uh-huh. Well, he'll want to play with his brother, and Sid will have one more year.
Well, it's very important to have both those guys.
Yes.
Right? Because we saw, I mean, that showed up a lot in the Purdue game. I mean, Josh McCray had an unbelievable game in the Purdue game. And can you think, like, he showed up in June.
Yes.
He showed up in June, and then the kid gets like 28 carries in early October.
Yeah.
And he's just gassed. I mean, he's gassed, right? And so that's the importance of it. When you have both of those guys, I mean, there is no rest. I mean, it is body blows on body blows. There's no rest for the opposing defense. And so, so yeah, I agree. You know, I'm glad to see that things seem to be progressing, you know, positively from Brett Bielema's press conference, you know, yesterday on Monday. And because you need Chase. I mean, he is a special fun back. I mean, he really is. And Josh McCray is too. And when you have a couple of those guys, like, you can do a lot with that.
Yeah.
You can do a lot with that.
Yeah. And if you get Chase back next year, like he could have one of those like specials. Obviously you're losing five seniors on the offensive line, three starters. So, you know, you've got a lot of work to do, and you're probably going to need at least one guy from the portal, if not two, and you're going to have to patch it together and get it going. But, you know, still it's this, like, you know, Chase has the potential, you know, I guess Reggie Corbin had those, the 2018 season where he got 1,000 yards, but Chase has the potential to have like a LeSure, like, 1,700 yard season, like a, you know, the bell cow kind of thing. So,
right.
You know, let's maybe make that the final topic here, which is I feel like my thoughts toward 2022 have adjusted significantly in these first eight games, in that, you know, the talk before the season obviously was there's 22 super seniors and you've got a senior quarterback and three, probably four seniors starting on the offensive line, and you've got, Carney, Gay, Hansen, you know, like you it's just going to be a dominated by seniors kind of roster. Well, now, you know, with the emergence of guys like Kirby Joseph and with Witherspoon playing so well and with, you know, Tolson and Barnes playing amazing on Saturday and everything else, you start to think, wow, they actually do have a fair bit back next year. Have your opinion and your thoughts toward the future changed, you know, as we've gone along here? I mean, did you share that, like, boy, we better do something this year because next year is a bit of a rebuild? Or, you know, what are your thoughts toward 2022?
Yeah, I think I thought it was obviously important to capitalize on all the guys coming back this year without question, just because either way we're going to lose a lot. I think the part that is – I honestly haven't thought too much about 2022 for a variety of reasons, but one of those is I feel like moving forward, every offseason in college football is going to be the most turnover of any offseason in college football history.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So that's the piece of it where it's like, you know, I'm fascinated to see what the roster looks like next spring and then next fall. And there's just, you know, and just knowing there's so many, there's going to be so much change. You know, we're going to have, you know, you're going to have Calvin Hart back. I mean, what an unbelievable asset that guy is. Mm-hmm. I hope his recovery is going well. But I mean, that game against Nebraska was just an absolutely sensational game. So it's hard for me to say what are my expectations for 2020 for 22 are. I want the team to be better than this year, right? On every front. It's really just that simple. So wherever we end up, I want it to be better, you know, and I want that to be, you know, I want us to be talking about, you know, going to another bowl game, because that's what I want more than anything for these guys this year, is to go and to go and get whatever, however many wins it takes to get to a bowl game this year, just because how important that is to the program, how satisfying that, because again, if Illinois can piece it together and win enough games to go to a bowl game, then obviously that's a team that has a lot of momentum. I think the fan base has been re-energized, certainly with this win over Penn State. I think people are excited. You know, I think Brett Bielema and his staff have done a really nice job of just kind of touching all the bases in terms of fan engagement, just selling the program, right? And buying into it and helping to establish an identity. So, my expectations for 2022 will be, I want it to build on where they end up this year, and I want it to be better, but it's going to be, I mean, you know, hold on to your butts, because it's just every offseason moving forward, there's going to be so much tumult and there's going to be so many transfers in and out of every single program in the country.
Yep.
And then you're adding high school recruits. I mean, it's just going to, you're recruiting and re-recruiting, like,
and you're recruiting your own roster,
and you're recruiting your own roster, and you have NIL, and you have all these other things, right? Which is so challenging. So, it's hard. It's going to be so hard. You love to do like three years ahead depth charts because you're a sicko.
Oh, just wait till the next bye week. We're going 2023 depth chart.
Yeah, that's.
I take sicko, and I like it. It's a term of endearment. I appreciate it.
It's meant as such. It's meant as such. But yeah, so that's ultimately where we end up is, I'm very hopeful for what the rest of the season holds. I think there's a lot of really, really great stuff. Obviously from that Penn State game, you know, historic win, tons of fun, you know, so much fun to rewatch, you know, and then, but it means more if you build on it.
Yeah.
It's just that simple. It means more if you build on it. And if it's not one data points, it becomes a cluster.
Yep. Right. Love it. All right. So thank you for doing this. I mean, I guess maybe I should tell the story of how long it's taken us to do this. We originally set up to do a podcast together. I just looked through my texts on August 31st. You had what, football at the time? What was, or is that, what sport was?
Dude, I can't remember.
You texted me like 15 minutes before and like, yeah.
Like, yeah, it's not going to work.
Just not going to happen tonight. So then we reschedule for like 2 weeks later. 45 minutes before we're supposed to do that one, I text you because I had something come up. I'm like, I can't do it tonight. So we're one for one, this and that. Then 2 weeks later, you were coming back from where when you called me and I couldn't record? Indianapolis or something like that? I feel like you were driving Yeah, you were driving from somewhere and you called me and like, hey, I'm in the car for an hour and a half. Can we record it right now?
I was probably either driving from Indianapolis or Peoria or yes. Joliet or something.
Yes. And so, but I couldn't. Like, I mean, literally that was like a 2-hour window that entire week where I wouldn't have been able to do it. So we are, what, 7 weeks later and we have finally sat down in the kitchen.
We recorded the podcast when we were intended to record the podcast.
That's exactly right.
And that is after a historic win on the road against number 7 Penn State.
1,000%. Okay, man. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming over. Let's have one more beer.